Chan, I find myself indulging in delicious food often. How can I contemplate to reduce the attachment and greed to food? Thank you.
And so having this liking arise for food that you like, so even though there is that sense of the mind going out to that and desiring it, if you eat in a balanced way and not excessively, then on the level of sila, dhamma, of virtue, that's not wrong. But if we're talking about the heart that has this problem of attaching to this until suffering arises, and wanting to seek that out, to try to get that taste, that flavor, then that is an issue. So you can try to train then. So the food that you like, the savory foods, the sweet foods, and all of it, you can mix it up together. And so train eating like the monks do. So mix all of the food together in the same vessel, and what's that like then? What's the flavor like? Is it still delicious? So all the fish and the meat and the desserts. So all these things that we consider to have a good flavor, and see, does it still taste good? Or if you mix water in with that food, then the flavor changes. And you can have mindfulness there of the arising and ceasing of that, the feeling of those flavors. And you can consider how when we put the food into our mouths and then we swallow it, then it doesn't have any value anymore. And that food goes down into our stomachs. And no matter what it is, whether it's the desserts, whether it's the savory foods, that it's not clean anymore. It all gets mixed up with the saliva and digested fluids. It's all mixed there in a way which is quite disgusting. And so if we put the food into our mouths, we chew it up, and then we take it out of the mouth, and we don't want to eat it anymore. So even though we may like the flavor, once the fruit has gone into the mouth, contemplate that and contemplate it going down into the stomach, and then it's not nice anymore. And then when it comes out the other end, it's really not beautiful. It's rotten already. So we contemplate this food and see how, so like the meat that we eat, that needs to be seasoned, flavored, before we eat it. It needs to be cooked. And because in its just raw state, it has that kind of raw, pungent smell to it. And so this, again, is something which is quite filthy or disgusting. So this is how the monks contemplate the food like this, that it's something that isn't clean. Or the vegetables that we eat, that they need to grow dependent upon fertilizers. So again, it's not something clean. And then if we just leave those vegetables there, then they'll start to rot. And so we contemplate this so that we don't attach to it. Like when the food goes into the body and then it starts becoming old already. And when it comes out the other side, that we don't even want to look at it anymore. And it's mixed up with different kinds of bacteria that have mixed in with that food in the small intestines. And so it's something filthy. We contemplate in this way and do this frequently. And you can try to also mix up, so the food as well, give that a go. And it's not delicious anymore when one does that. Try like the monks do, eating all the food in the same vessel. Again, whether the sweet food, whether it's the other condiments, or things like the chili paste or Ovaltine, you can all mix that together. And this kind of removes that feeling of deliciousness of the food. So for myself, when I was a layperson, I tried this out. I went and I bought a curry, and I thought, well, what do I do with that? Because no matter what, if I just ate it, it would be delicious no matter what. So then I mixed it up with the sweet things, and the flavor, I can't really describe what that was like. And I trained like this because I thought, well, in no long time I'm going to go and ordain, and this is how the monks eat. They eat everything together in their bowl. And seeing that this is how the great teachers had eaten, that all the different kinds of curries, and the really spicy ones, or the boiled dishes, the chili paste, that all of that was mixed up in the same pot, and they used a ladle to ladle that out, and the Ovaltine was mixed in too. And so for myself, when I determined to became a monk and was determined to eat everything in my bowl, and there was some Ovaltine that was passed around, so I put that into my bowl as well. And so again, it's hard to describe what that flavor was like. But you can try doing this, being restrained in this way, eating in this way, and do this little by little, and torture this a little bit. Try to go against those defilements. Or you can try out that, what food do I like? And then try just not eating that. Or if the mind thinks about a certain kind of food, okay, I'm not going to eat that food. And there'll be suffering there, because you want to eat that thing. And so you can check, how much does the mind suffer over that? When we get the things we like, we feel at ease. But when we get the things that we dislike, then that grates against the heart, and the heart can feel aggravated and hot. So this is also a way of practicing.
Many years ago, I had given away something that was valuable, both in terms of the price and the mental value, to be put in a pagoda. Then I found that my practice had progressed considerably. Recently, I have just given up the largest wealth that I have ever owned in my life, which also had a lot of emotional value to me for Buddhasasana. I found that since I gave up that wealth, my practice has clearly progressed profoundly. Longpa, why and how does sacrificing external wealth help with the internal practice? Does this mean monks who give up their worldly wealth should be able to take on the practice in more profound levels than the laity, right?
And so this, what you're talking about, is an act of merit and generosity. You have this thing which has value, and that you're attached to. And it has value both externally, but also within your heart as well. And then you offer that to the Buddha and to a Jedi in praise and homage to the Buddha. And so this is a deed of generosity that's developing this dana bharami, and it brings great results with it. So it makes the heart more light and spacious and brighter. And you think that this thing which has such great value to me in my heart, that I've offered that to the Buddha already with faith. And through that, then the heart becomes joyous and can result in the practice developing faster as well. And why is that? It's because we have destroyed one part of the defilements, destroyed a part of greed already, and the heart is joyous. And this is the benefit of generosity and sila, is that samadhi arises, that the heart is able to become stable and well established. So next needs to give up this wrong view as well, this view that of a self, and change that into the view of not self. Because the heart now is still attached to these external things. So then we change those external wealths into internal wealth. And through that, there's a joyousness of heart. And there's rapture that arises. And if we recollect that, then that's a means of cultivating the heart as well, bhavana. So we recollect that chaka nusati. And so these deeds of giving, of sacrifice, and this can give our hearts an even greater peace. So it's not the case that we just do it and then we forget about it, but we should recollect these deeds frequently. And when we've been selfless in this way, then what does that feel like? And recollect that generosity, that selflessness, that act of giving, and use that as an object of your heart. So this is a means to bring the heart to peace and give it more peace and a higher level of peace. So do this a lot, develop this a lot, and it's an appropriate means of practice for one who is inclined towards faith. So faith in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. So when you do these acts of generosity, then recollect that frequently. So in terms of the Sangha, or monks having more profound levels of practice, well, that really depends upon the heart. And so that is the case for some monks, and it's not the case for other monks. But can you say that monks are better than lay people and their practice is better, and that's the case for all of them? You can't say that, because different individuals have cultivated different levels of parami, of spiritual virtues. And some lay people, that they've created a great amount of these, but it's just not their time to ordain yet and to practice in that way, in that sincere way yet. And for some monks, they're just beginning to cultivate these spiritual virtues. So one can't say that they're better or they're higher, but for the most part, that monks have a greater opportunity and that they have this time to develop their hearts. And they're keeping sila on the level of celibacy or the holy life. So they've got this good opportunity, a better opportunity than lay people do. They also don't have various works and duties to do, but rather depend upon the kindness of the laity and the barami of the Buddha in order to sustain one's life. So the metta of the lay people who are supporting the Buddhasasana.
Dear Ajahnanan, I would like to say very much thank you for online retreat events and all your teachings. May you live long and healthy. I have difficulty on how to see mudita and upekkha towards living beings who are lower than us, such as animals and beggars. Please enlighten and open the poor mind. Thank you.
So initially, when developing metta, loving kindness, karuna, compassion, mudita, sympathetic joy, upekkha, equanimity, that we start with our own minds first. We start developing that towards ourselves first, and carry on doing that until we're skilled in cultivating these four divine states of mind, Brahma Viharas. And then next we can share that then with, and cultivate that towards people who we love, so our parents or close friends, and then go on to people in the middle level, people we feel somewhat indifferent towards. But if you are developing mudita, or trying to develop that towards people kind of lower down than you, or animals, and you can't do that, then you can just gradually try doing that little by little. And you can reflect how the So you can reflect how animals are like this, or people who are born into a state of difficulty and suffering and are poor like this. It's because of their the results of karma that they've produced, that they're born in this way. And so this mind then has to receive the results of that. And so if the karma is good, then we get kind of pleasant results from that. But if it's not, then one is born into a difficult situation. So if the karma is good, one may get born as a deva to a higher realm. And if one is generous, then one may be born into a wealthy family and have much wealth. But if one is stingy in this life, then the future lives may be one of suffering and difficulty, and so become a beggar, for instance. As there was a case of, during the time of the Buddha, that there was a woman who was a beggar, and she became pregnant with a boy. When she became pregnant, then she didn't receive anything from her begging. And even when she was a part of a group of beggars, then the entire group wouldn't get anything. And the head of this whole group of beggars, he was quite intelligent. And so he saw that this was happening, that before they had received things, but now they weren't. So he separated them out into different groups, and then kept separating it out into smaller groups until he found out that it was this woman who was the cause of this. Because normally they would get things, but then in that area, but then when that woman went, then they wouldn't get anything. And so she was causing a lot of difficulty for them. So he asked for her to not go along with them to beg. So when she gave birth to this child, and eventually she told this child to go out and beg for himself, because the situation was getting very difficult. And so this child ended up outside a house, and the Buddha was on Bindapat, on arms round, with Venerable Ananda, and they walked past this house. And Venerable Ananda could see that the Buddha was giving some kind of gesture, and so he asked what that was. And the Buddha said that this child used to be the father of this very wealthy household. So Venerable Ananda asked the Buddha for permission to tell the child of this household, who was very wealthy now, that this beggar child was your father in his previous life. So upon telling him that, this rich man didn't believe this easily, And he couldn't accept that his father was now born like this as a beggar. But this child could remember where the gold was hidden away within this house. He was able to say all of this correctly until the this wealthy man could accept that that was the case. And so he took in this child and looked after him very well. And his karma now had ended already, and that was due to the kindness and compassion of the Buddha that that could happen. But very few people are fortunate in this way. So therefore, when we see people who are begging, that we can reflect how this is the results of karma that they have done, that they're experiencing this. And so therefore we make the determination that we're not going to be stingy and create those results ourselves. So we'll give and be selfless, if not a lot, then a little. You can reflect when we see animals that they're born into this state because of the greed that they had. The greed, hatred, and delusion is the cause for a mind to be born into an animal form. So then we reflect that I'm not going to put in those causes myself, that I'm going to keep the five precepts. And so we should train in this, in developing this kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy towards these beings, and train in this steadily, do this little by little. And eventually, if you train in that, then you'll be able to do it.